We're doing the Sefer HaMidot. We're up to Shar Bitachon, Perek Sheini, second chapter of Shar Bitachon. And we had seen that there's a sustenance that is granted every organism. There is life itself, which is viewed as an ongoing gift. So if Hashem were to withhold that for a minute, then life would cease from that organism. And then there are the things which give life, but not every second, like food and drink. And then there are things which one could live without, but that Hashem gives us, and they adorn our lives. They make our lives more pleasant, like jewelry and stuff like that. And when we look at the world, so then we should realize that the creator of all this is constantly observing, is constantly watching over what's going on over here. That's the concept of Hashgacha Piratit. And now we begin the second chapter. Hanivra Adam Chudash Kasher Yitbonen Al Etzem Mitziuto Shelo Midaato Uvakashato. Every one of us is a creation or something new that came to the world. And when we look at our existence, an existence that came to be without our choice. No one asked us. Ki me chesed habore. It stemmed from the kindness of the Creator. Hamchadesh b'tuvo u'mamtzim mitziyut anivrim v'avayatam v'kiyumam. The Creator who in His kindness rejuvenates the world, gives new creatures to the world, keeps people existent, it keeps their existence ongoing. So that the world will recognize His greatness and His kindness that is without end. So, when the creature thinks about his existence and realizes, hey, I got here and I had nothing to do with that. So then my continued existence, even though I have to take certain steps to ensure it happens, I have to breathe, I have to eat, I have to drink, but I don't have to worry, because I have to realize that at the end of the day, there's so much going on here from the beginning of my existence that's beyond my control, so I don't have to worry. I have to take necessary steps, but not to worry. Just as before one's creation, one didn't know he was going to be created. We didn't have this concept, every one of us, before we were born, that from nothing would come to be something, this human being. So too now, he shouldn't be worried about the things he needs for his existence. That doesn't mean he doesn't take care of them. Obviously we breathe, obviously we eat, we drink, we make a livelihood, we find a way of making a livelihood. That's all true. But there's a person who does it and says, okay, this is part of life, this is what I have to do. And then there's a person who worries about it. Worrying, he says, has no place. Because you have to do what you can do, and you have to realize there are things beyond your control, and that's just the way it's going to be. And that's the way it always was. And you came to be in this world, and that was something that was beyond your control. So there's something beyond your control, and that's how you began life. So that's how you're going to continue life. Part of our weakness in life is that we cease to control. We have a great desire to control, to control our destiny, to control our future, to control our health. We buy life insurance and medical insurance, and it's good that we buy them. But we have to realize that at the end of the day, we don't really control too much. Because undoubtedly, the one who gave him life will keep him existent. Again, obviously, he's not saying don't breathe, God's going to make it work. He's saying there's no room for worry, there's room for diligence, there's room to do what's necessary, but there's no room for worry. So this needs to be developed further, because the Gemara does discuss, why do we worry? Why do we fret? Why does a person have fear? And the Gemara says, Pachadu v'tzion chata'im. The reason a person is scared is because he knows he has sin. So he's not so sure he's worthy. Meaning, the first level is a person who doesn't realize that God's running the show. Then you have a person who says, okay, I'm going to do my best, but I know God runs the show. I can't be too confident he's going to help me, because I know what I did wrong. That's what the Gemara says. That's why a more God-fearing person also has fear, because he's really concerned. He knows he's not perfect. And that's why we find Yaakov Avinu was also scared. What was Yaakov scared about? So Chazal say, he said, maybe I haven't lived up to my end. Or an honesty. Okay, yeah, I'll drink to that. Yeah. אבל אחר אשר נאתר האדם מכל צבאות הבריאה שיהיה בעל בחירה. After humanity was crowned from all the armies of creation that he should be the one with free choice. Now, this is a bichlal, an interesting concept. There's a discussion. Did we discuss this once? Whether animals have free will? So the Aruch HaShulchan says,
two things.
Yeah.
I remember seeing at the beginning you said something that seems to be that they don't have free will.
Right.
And then you show me that it seems they get to be pure.
You hear the two things you do?
Huh?
What are the two things you do?
Either they do have free will or they don't have free will.
So I think the Aruch HaShulchan says they do have free will, but they don't have Yetzer Hara. I don't know why you have to say Yetzer Hara is free will. Free will is free will. It has nothing to do with your Yetzer.
If you don't have the Yetzer, if
the animal doesn't recognize God and also doesn't have a Yetzer, so where is it left? Being a dumb animal.
Right.
That doesn't mean it doesn't have free will. The question is, can it be held accountable for its free will? So, generally, we assume not. Maimonides writes in The Guide to the Perplexed, in the Mor Nebuchim, that the reason animals get killed after they killed is not because it's their fault, but they get killed in order to punish the owner. And that doesn't really... That's not so easy for us to understand. As Nachmanides points out, how could you say that? The Talmud rules that even an ownerless animal, even an animal that's out in the wild that kills, also gets killed. So you see, it's not to punish the owner. An ox runs into town and kills people, we kill it. And it's not to punish the owner, even though you could get it out of harm's way. You could slaughter it and eat the meat. No, kill it. That's why Nachmanides goes a route which people interpret to mean. I don't see how they see it in Nachmanides' words. But people interpret Nachmanides to mean that animals have free will, and that's why they're held accountable for their actions. That's a big one.
How could they have free will, though? They just run after their instincts and desires.
I don't think that's what Nachmanides is saying. I don't see how they see it in Nachmanides' words.
But how does the Aruch HaShulchan
say it? So that, one can have free will even though they're just going after their desires.
Why? It's not choosing anything. He has no intelligence. What is choice anyway? If he's shown a pie, the pie and a piece of pizza, so does he have free choice to choose each one?
Yeah.
No, he goes after whatever his instincts tell him. He can't decide, you know what? Really, I've had pizza all week. There's no decision here. It's all
okay. And what about a child? Does he have free will?
Child also has a problem. I mean, there at least he develops some kind of understanding.
What about the Talmud that says that from day one a child has a Yetzer Hara? What Yetzer Hara? He doesn't have any, no intelligence. How could he have a Yetzer Hara?
He has a Yetzer Hara. He just doesn't have a Yetzer
Hara. I'm asking, why Yetzer Hara? He doesn't understand anything. What do you want from him?
What kind of Yetzer?
Okay. Say it. I agree with you. Okay, fine. No, I don't agree with the point you're saying. I agree with your answer about a child. Say it. Okay. You're talking about an animal?
I'm talking about animals.
I think the question here is how you define free choice. You're assuming that the definition of free choice means that one has the tools to apply that freedom. And I'm not sure that has to be so.
How would you define free will for an animal?
I think that it can be understood as the freedom to choose, either way.
I mean, no one's taking his hand and putting it over here.
Right. Right. We also have instincts.
Yeah.
When someone throws a ball at your eye and your eyelash closes, it means you didn't have free choice. You also had an instinct.
Right.
The fact that you didn't apply conscious thought doesn't mean you don't have free choice.
No, well, in general, but I mean, but that's because. But I think the argument is that an animal, all it does is that the kind of motivating factor of in the eye.
Are you so confident? When dolphins save a human's life, are we so confident? I don't know.
Yeah.
When a dog is faithful to its owner, are we so confident that it's all instinctive? I'm saying you...
It's not choosing to be loyal. Something that was implanted by
his
relationship with the owner.
Okay.
With dolphins, they have the instinct of defending their own sharks or exploiting their own like if he's some sort of instinctively social.
Okay.
I would go even further and argue that free choice only exists in morality,
I don't see that we differ. I think we differ in our definitions of what free choice is.
How do you define free will? Define free will.
I'm not sure how to define free will. I'm going with what the commentaries are saying. I don't know. I could see any of the definitions. I'm not taking sides. I feel like you are, so I'm trying to show the other side, but I don't have an opinion on that.
Free will simply means that no one is physically coercing you into doing something. Like you have the physical abilities to do what they are being.
The angels. The angels don't have free will because having physical coercion is so obvious.
But angels do have free choice.
I thought they see so clearly how things exist. They respond. They have one response.
That might be true, but they still have free choice. You see, throughout the Talmud and in the Midrashim, you see that angels have free choice. The Talmud tells us in Yuma that Hashem tells Gabriel, go take burning coals and throw it out on Jerusalem. So Gabriel finds a way to finagle so as not to destroy all of Jerusalem. And God beats him up for it. What's going on here? If God didn't want it to happen. And the Medrash says God comes to create a world. He asks the angels, should I create a world? They say, nah, what, a human being? He's going to do such a horrible job. What are you creating him for? Bam, Hashem destroys them. Second group, same story. Third group, same story. So you could say they were supposed to give that answer and they were supposed to get destroyed. Okay, maybe. The angels come to Lot and they say, we are going to overturn the city. They get punished. What do you mean you're going to overturn the city? God's going to overturn the city. Shouldn't have spoken that way. They get punished. I don't know. Certainly see in the Midrashim that angels have free choice. And they get punished when they make the wrong choice. So you could say God wanted the angels to make that wrong choice. That's why they did it. Okay.
I think think that requires a lot of human. That goes against the whole idea that angels are openly revealed to the Hashem's glory so much that they only do what's appropriate. How can an angel who sees Hashem's glory say, we're going to destroy it? It's a little difficult. I think it's a lot of the. But the cloud, I mean, free choice, the chilach of seed, the freedom to choose, right? Freedom to choose. And if you have, I mean, if you're having, I think there's a choice that you have, you have to be able to make that choice. It's not something that just happens. It's just because, you know, the bull is attracted to red, so he's going to charge. It's a choice.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. I'm just not sure. We have to define free choice, though. I hear? Okay. I don't mind saying animals don't have free choice. It's very logical to me to say like you're saying. I would be a proponent of that. If you asked me which one made more sense to me, I'd say like you. I'm just, there is another opinion offered, so I'm trying to express it, but say it. Because he said that man was crowned from all the armies of creation, that he should have, he should be master of choice. I mentioned that this is a whole topic about whether other creatures have free choice or not. Asher b'vchirato atova yateh lavchin v'chiz dabro yitbarach. That when he chooses that which is good, so then the kindness of the Creator, blessed be He, is focused upon him. So then it is necessary that he appear before his Creator with actions that are good and correct. That will find favor before Hashem. And then Hashem, in turn, grants him blessing and life. And he lacks no good. And he doesn't lack of all good. But if he rebels against Hashem, and he upsets him with his evil actions, his sinful actions, then Hashem's anger and zeal will burn against that person. And then Hashem will prevent from him the blessing and that which is good. As the verse says, Hashem says, behold, I give before you blessing and curse. Blessing when you listen to Hashem, curse when you don't listen. And therefore it is fitting that every person should invest all their strength in the service of Hashem to find favor in His eyes, blessed be He, and that our hope, our thoughts should be towards Hashem, just as a servant is looking up to his master, just as a maid looks up to her master, and we should be conscious of the fear we should have of Hashem, and so we shouldn't sin. For if we were to sin, then we would detract of the things that give us existence in this world, as we discussed in the previous chapter. There's different levels of life, different levels of life support that we need. And then we'll be knocked out of our state, God forbid. And we should reach a finite conclusion that assistance comes from Hashem and there's no reason to put our trust or our hope in anything else. Because who has the capacity to give us existence, to continue our existence? He is singular, there is no second.
Just
just as we are created from nothing and we stand living existence, it is all His decree, it is His desire, blessed be He, and it is His tremendous, His awesome oversight is, can mean to oversee or could mean to miss, right?
Supervision,
okay.
Overlooking.
No, to overlook is that. Okay. And if not for His supervision, then nothing could remain existent. So too, if you think, I have to please my boss, I have to please the authorities, well, none of them would be around if not for His say-so too. It is from the granting of the merciful One who gives existence. He does kindness and grants life to all that are living. So you shouldn't have confidence in something that's a creation Himself. He was created. He's something new. One's confidence, one's hope should be with the One who actually created him, in His good, in His kindness. To work hard in His service so that one finds favor in His eyes, so that He turns to one with kindness. As the verse says, have confidence in Hashem and do good. They go hand in hand. If you realize that the source of everything is Hashem, if you have bitachon b'Hashem, so then the logical outcome of that should be that you do good. It goes hand in hand. If He's in control, He wants me to do good. So then, if I realize He's in control, then I'm going to do good. אבל גם כי הדברים פשוטים ועל נקלה יתורר האדם עליהם מעצמו, and even though these are simple concepts, which a person can easily reach himself, כי ביד האדם הוא להמשיך על עצמו חוט של חסד למצוכן בעיני השם, so then our control, if a person wants to find favor in the eyes of his creator, he can do that. As the verse says, the God who has your soul in His hand and everything you do He really controls, you haven't honored Him. Daniel says to Belshazzar on that fateful night, when Belshazzar gleefully takes out the vessels of the temple to use at his own feast and feeds his dogs off the temple vessels. So then the hand appears and writes on the wall, and Daniel tells him, you didn't honor the God who actually created you, who controls your behavior, who can control the outcome of your endeavors. So even though it would seem to be something obvious, nonetheless, our desires, our inclinations overtake us, and they darken our intellect. להתאים את ליבו על ידי כמה סיבות כוזביות אשר הם קינתיים מגודלים מנורנו. And they, so to speak, suffocate the heart with all kinds of false reasons that are like young saplings that have been growing since our youth. טרם נפקח עינינו להביט על מעשי השם הנוראים והגדולים, נשום כל ביטחוננו על סיבות, לפתוח על שקר, לחצוב, בערות נשברות אשר לא יכילו המים, היא המטרת את נשמתנו מזכות בוראינו. He says, every person has thoughts and attitudes that he developed in his youth.
Just one second.
Okay. And those are like little saplings that are within one's heart, and they're there. And before we start thinking about God being awesome, before we start thinking about Him as one who we should put our confidence in, well, there are other attitudes that are second nature to us, or even first nature to us. And those attitudes involve placing our confidence in fallacious concepts. You assume, I'm going to work hard, I'm going to succeed. You're going to work hard, you might succeed. You should work hard, but that doesn't mean you will succeed. So in our youth, before we can come to these conclusions, we've developed these attitudes, what he calls like wells that have cracks in the walls and they can't retain their own water. But those attitudes are ha-matredet et nishmatenu mizchot boreinu. They're the ones that really bother us, that get in the way of recognizing our Creator. Meaning there are those childish attitudes, those things which were not thought through, but they did become second nature. And they're deeply ingrained in a person. They're like young saplings that are there, but they get in the way. And they are what stand in the way of a person really serving the Holy God. And that's what really brings us to some evil things, to some misdirection. We end up with anger, we end up with anguish, because we transgress the will of our Creator. And we take cover in the lies, we hide under fallacious concepts, and suddenly even those that we should respect have nothing to offer. Doesn't matter if he's a rabbi, doesn't matter if he's a teacher. Because they all end up going in the wrong path, so to speak, to land that they're not familiar with, to seek out their parnasa. People end up working hard to make ends meet because their focus is, the harder I'll work, the more of a chance I'll succeed. Well, there might be some truth to that, but people have to work with the attitude, I'm going under the shade of my master. There's a Creator, and it is with His guidance that I'm going to work. As the verse says, just as a servant looks up to his master, just as the maid looks up to her master, so do we look up to Hashem, hoping for His compassion. So now we will explain what really causes us to veer away from bitachon. So the first thing we discussed is we have attitudes from our youth which are built in, which we don't find it easy to overcome. And those attitudes push us off the path, and they stand in the way, and they're our first nature, they're not even our second nature. And even though intellectually we can arrive at other conclusions, that seems to be the default. We end up going down that route all over again and ask ourselves, wait a second, I thought I said I'm going that way. And that might be the prototypical example of what Yom Kippur looks like. You stand during these 10 days and you think to yourself, I know what I should be doing. I know how I want this coming year to look. We're out of time.